The Comic Book Time Machine, Episode 3, Mark Shaw Manhunter's First Issue Special. Evening, kids. Let's talk about Mark Shaw, Manhunter. Who, you ask? Well, if you're listening to this, you're going to find out a lot more about Mark Shaw, Manhunter over the next few years. And by the time you're done here, you're either going to have more information about Mark Shaw than you ever wanted, or at least I'm going to have some fun sitting here talking to myself as I read through and think about Manhunter, as I use the comic book time machine to jump back into my past. Who is Manhunter? Mark Shaw is the Manhunter. Now, I'm not talking about John Jones, the cookie-loving, green-skinned Martian Manhunter with Superman-level powers. I'm talking about Mark Shaw, a man who has taken on the Manhunter moniker to fight crime. Shaw was actually the second hero to take up the title Manhunter in the DC Universe. And again, he's not associated with the Martian. He's associated with something even bigger than just one world and Mars. Shaw was a public defender who was unhappy with the justice system and how criminals were able to get away with no penalty. And so Mark Shaw's uncle introduced him to a crime fighter cult called the Manhunters. And he took on the title and the costume from the previous Manhunter named Paul Kirk. What Shaw didn't know at the time was that the Manhunters were the first attempt by the Guardians of Oa to police the galaxy. These androids had kept the peace with the slogan, "No man escapes the Manhunters," as they dispensed passionless justice. But over time, that code became more important to them than justice, and the Guardians had to decommission the Manhunters and replace them with a new police force named the Green Lanterns after they had committed an act that was so heinous and unspeakable. I'm not going to get into it now, but the time that we meet Mark Shaw, he would have been branded a hero, a villain, a hero again, and would have been part of a plot by the Manhunters to actually unseat the Guardians and resume their role in the galaxy as peacekeepers or peace rulers. But by the time we get to Mark Shaw in 1988, his life was really, really complicated. Now, that's a pretty small thumbnail about Mark Shaw. He's not the last Manhunter, and he's not the first, but he's my Manhunter. And I will say this, I am pretty excited about the fact that he's even shown up. Mark Shaw has, not as Manhunter, but as Mark Shaw, in the DC New 52. But those are all stories that I'd like to talk about on a different day. First, what I'd really like to talk about is, why do I love Manhunter? I get really excited about Mark Shaw, but why? I got a whole list of reasons. First and foremost, Mark Shaw's like Batman. Like Batman, he's a mass vigilante with gadgets. He even has his own version of a utility belt, but instead of being a belt, it's really his mask and his power baton. You never know that, you know, you never know what Mark Shaw is going to pull out of that belt or that pouch. Again, the belt or the baton, it's not even a pouch. What sort of techie tool he's got hidden in his baton, in his stick. And so in many ways, he really is like Batman in the fact that he uses these tools to fight villains. And sometimes good guys. And he's really like Batman because he has no powers of his own. If you remove his mask and take away his power baton, Shaw's just a well-trained, intelligent man with a mission. And he's got to use his intellect and his developed physical skills to run around in a world of androids and supervillains and superheroes. And in many ways, Mark Shaw's us within the world of superheroes. He's just one really trained, well-trained man who's not perfect. And unlike Batman, he's not perfect. I mean, Batman often will never makes a mistake. And Batman's got tons and tons of cash behind him. He's got unlimited funds. So even though Bruce Wayne slash Batman may be a typical human, he's somebody I can never be. Just because, to be honest, I'm not a super millionaire. But while he's like Batman, he's also not Batman. Again, he doesn't have that fortune to back his efforts. And because he doesn't have that fortune, he has to figure out how do you monetize being a vigilante? For Mark Shaw, that means he has to go into the bounty hunter business so that he can both catch villains and make money. Unlike Batman, you know, Batman just leaves people and calls in Gotham PD and says, hey, you know, I've got him wrapped up. No, Mark Shaw's got to wait around. He's got to do the paperwork because he needs to get his sweet, sweet monies. And he needs those sweet, sweet monies so he can pay the light bill. So unlike Batman, he's got some complications because he's got to fill out that paperwork just because he's not independently wealthy. And he's got to work to eat. And he's not Batman because there's a family behind him. And I'm not talking about the Batman family where we have sidekicks and we have, you know, other heroes. I'm talking about a real family without powers. As we get into Manhunter, we're going to find out that he's got an extended family of a stepfather, mother, and siblings. And that family's going to both be an asset to him, and it's going to be a liability over the years. And I will say this, as a man who was luckily never orphaned at a young age, and as an adult, I have a family. It's easier for me to relate to Mark Shaw than Bruce Wayne because of the fact that he has these family relationships. Yeah, he's kind of, Manhunter is a DC Marvel hero, and the fact that his family kind of gives him those real life issues and complications that we don't necessarily see with a lot of DC heroes like Batman. Because let's be honest, with Batman's relationships, often they're more likely to be cut off. Where with somebody like Manhunter, where you have siblings, you just can't do that. And so he's going to have to balance, you know, crime fighting and family. And just like Peter Parker, he's going to have to figure out how to pay the bills. He really is a DC Marvel hero. And finally, Mark Shaw needs redemption. I'm a big sucker for redemption stories in comic books and comic book media. Mm-hmm. And so a great example for me is I really enjoyed the show Heroes. And one of my favorite characters came out of season 2. His name was Adam Monroe. And he was kind of this villain who you could see inside of him this nugget of goodness. This nugget of, he's going to come over to the side of the angels. And so one of the biggest disappointments for me when it came to Heroes was the fact that they never took that step to redeem Adam Monroe and to make him the good guy that I really wanted him to be. And so this is something that's going on here. Mark Shaw was part of the Manhunter plot to take down the Guardians. He was a bad guy, and he's going to have to prove himself and prove that he is, in fact, a hero. So, for me, the pinnacle of Mark Shaw's career is the Manhunter series, which ran for 24 issues from 1988 to 1990. The series was written by comic legend John Ostrander and his wife Kim Yale. Ostrander had written a number of prominent titles from Suicide Squad, Grimjack, Star Wars Legacy, Star Wars Agent of the Empire, which I love as a series. And he's even filled in recently on some Aquaman stories featuring the others and things like the Aquaman Annual 1. Kim Yale was a writer and editor, and she worked a lot on the DC's licensed books like Star Trek. Sadly, she died in 1997 due to breast cancer. For me, it's this pair that defined Mark Shaw and made him real. And when I heard a reference recently on the Suicide Squad episode of Arrow, where they said the Ostrander suite, I was probably the only guy in the U.S. who giggled like a true little fanboy that I was and immediately thought not of Suicide Squad, but I thought of Mark Shaw. But I will admit, though Ostrander and Yale is where Mark Shaw started for me, that's not where he really began. And so if you're going to look at the Mark Shaw story, you have to start with first issue special number 5 in August 1975, sold for just 25 cents. I'll be honest, I couldn't read when this came out. first issue special was an anthology series, and it was really tryouts for future stories and future titles. And the greatest success that really came out of it would be issue number 8, which was written and drawn by Mike Grell, which introduced Warlord to the DC Universe. But it's here in issue number 5 where we get the origins of Mark Shaw, written and drawn by Jack King Kirby, one of the two biggest names of comic book history, and he created My Manhunter. And I do have a giant, giant, giant smile on my face. So the story in first issue special number 5, it opens as the Manhunter enters the cave of the Talking Heads. The cave is the home to Chopper, who decorates his cave with masks, which he has automated with recording tapes. Chopper appears to be like this big pink alien head, which looks like something you would see out of the original Battlestar Galactica. The two fight with Manhunter using his power baton to fight Chopper's attacks, but he realizes he just barely escapes and begins to think of the future when he can no longer get his man. He walks away from the cave of the Talking Heads thinking, if justice fails, civilization fails. Somewhere else, a young Mark Shaw's at the home of his uncle, and he expresses displeasure with justice as he feels he cannot help the innocent despite being a public defender. His case in point is his latest client, Joe Burke, who he feels is a patsy to somebody bigger. He does not believe that the system will help the man, and he'll be in prison for a crime committed by somebody else, somebody with more power. His uncle, an archaeologist, shows Mark his treasures, which includes the outfit and mask of a Shaun, who looks remarkably like Manhunter. Uncle explains that the Shaun are a cult that seek justice, and they might be active today. Uncle gives a lion medallion to Shaw, which will allow him to speak to the Shaun Grand Master. At that moment, the current Manhunter is discussing his inability to complete his task with the Grand Master. But the Grand Master urges him to calm down because fate will fill their need. This is when the Grand Master hears the voice of Shaw coming from his decorative lion pillar. And a new warrior comes forward. Shaw returns to his uncle's days later as a candidate for Manhunter. Shaw is dressed in full outfit, but has not yet been granted a baton. Uncle informs Mark that Burke had been killed, and Shaw feels guilty because Burke had been released into his custody for his own safety. And that's where he died, in the safety of Mark Shaw, which didn't really work. Then assassins enter Uncle Bradford Shaw's home to kill the public defender, but they meet the justice of the Manhunter instead. Shaw then commits himself to defeating the crime boss, the Hog, and the older Manhunter and the Grand Master elsewhere discuss the promise of their new candidate. The issue ends with, want to see the clash between Manhunter and the Hog? If so, write and tell us. Apparently not enough people wrote since Mark Shaw would not be getting his own series for, another decade. So, typically when I get the keys to the comic book time machine, I'm going to go back to my childhood to reclaim a piece of my past. But today, I am going back to a time, again, where I could not even read. I did not read or own this comic until I had reached middle age. In fact, I just bought it. And it's something that's really kind of shameful for me because despite the fact that it was clear as the nose on my face, I had not considered the fact that Mark Shaw was created by a comics legend. I did not associate Kirby at all with Manhunter, and so I'm kind of ashamed at this recent discovery for me that he was involved. But honestly, despite the fact that I understand some of Kirby's history, I still have a hard time identifying Kirby with anything DC instead of Marvel. So you could probably call Kirby's time with DC a Daniel blind spot, and I will admit that discovering Kirby as the creator of Mark Shaw helped validate my fandom of the Masked Vigilante, even if I was a little ashamed of myself. I do have to admit that Kirby pulled a fast one with me on the story. With Manhunter in the cave in his old school uniform, I was convinced that this was Mark Shaw in action and that we had just been dropped in a traditional comic book story where you see the, what's going to happen at the end at the beginning and then back up. So I was convinced that it was Shaw that was fighting Chopper, and that that was part of Shaw's origin. So when it turned out to be Paul Kirk, I was a little surprised and somewhat thrilled, because I've never really seen Kirk in action. It really felt like Kirby was handing the torch from Kirk to Shaw, especially since they could wear the same costume. And it makes sense that Kirby would have included Shaw, since he had pitched a new Manhunter comic with a new hero, and he would attempt to create links to the past with his reboot as part of a bigger DC story. So in the end, I really liked the use of Kirk, even if it was him stepping down. Another thing I loved about the opening of the story was the use of masks. Masks, as we will see, will be a huge part of the Ostrander and Yale opening story arc. And really, masks thematically have a huge impact in comics, including, as we have prominently seen in Batman. Is he Bruce Wayne or is he Batman? Is Chopper the man inside the mask or is he the mask? Does he have the ability to switch identities by switching masks? Is Paul Kirk Paul Kirk, or is he Manhunter as defined and represented by his mask? The same question is one we have to ask about Shaw. I feel like the only person who can really truly answer this question for us in this issue is Shaw. He's still not fully a Manhunter. He's only a candidate. And he has personal feelings of outrage over miscarriages of justice. So at the moment, I feel like Shaw is Shaw, and the Manhunter identity is only bringing out aspects of his personality. For now. I would say story-wise, this issue is right in the middle. It is a readable story, but far from the best title I've ever read. And it is somewhat romantic to me in the sense that the bad guys are ugly and clearly bad. Seriously, Hogg hits the pages years before Boss Hogg on the Dukes of Hazzard, but you clearly know, because he is unattractive, that he is the bad guy. And you clearly understand that Mark Shaw is a hero because he is handsome and well-dressed. I personally see in the later Mark Shaw somewhat manic personality, and you can see hints of this since Shaw is clearly upset with the miscarriage of justice. But this is in Kirby's world is a righteous anger, since justice must be served by both Manhunters in the story. They are heroes, not unstable, anti-gray hero villainous guys. After the story concludes, Kirby makes a one-page pitch for Manhunter, the justice principle. And he makes it clear that justice is something that society needs to combat evil and most of all fear. He writes in response to fear, "In the fantasy world, this basic fear persists, but we're able to resolve it to its highest degree of satisfaction in the representation of a superb Manhunter who acquits himself in our behalf against the caniest of criminals. We are protected by his strength, his keen insights, and his willingness to act in the most dangerous of our problems. He takes upon himself the weight of our problems and our dangers and our risks. We are the little guys, and we need him when we're pressed. We ache for justice all the more because the little guy throughout the ages could expect so little." So the oppressed needs a savior to help carry forth their burden. But does one need to be a superhero or a biblical savior to carry the weight and pain of oppression? No, Kirby continues. You can be the big little guy with the necessary moxie to handle whatever the opposition throws against you. The idea that anyone could be a savior would have been a theme that resonates with Kirby. First, he is born into an Austrian Jewish immigrant family in New York. Therefore, the idea and imagery of a savior would have been familiar to Kirby as part of his cultural upbringing. But second, Kirby the man had experienced the power of becoming a savior, serving in the U.S. Army 11th Infantry Regiment during World War II. Kirby entered the European theater months after D-Day in 1944. Kirby was assigned scout duty so he could use his drawing abilities to create maps. So he had risked his life serving as a savior, a manhunter, one might say, in liberating Europe from the Germans. And he paid that price of battle, nearly having his legs amputated due to frostbite after the winter of 1944. So I do not believe these words from Kirby were hollow. I have recently read a book about a major movie studio during World War II, and a lot of their staff pressed into service were placed in positions where they remained at home in California, and only a few were pressed into frontline service. But for Kirby, service was dangerous and had a price, with him almost becoming permanently disabled. I believed he identified with the idea and it lived becoming a literal savior for others. And this is why I love comic books, because you can teach complex truths in pictures and words. And I love we have this first truth play out through a comic legend. I don't know if I'm seeing enough of Mark Shaw yet to make a full opinion of him. He is passionate. He is honestly upset about the miscarriage of justice that Burke is suffering. But he jumps to join the Shawn without making arrangements for Burke, who is in his custody and dies on his watch. I can see the glimmer of the mental instability that Shaw will suffer in the future. But I could be projecting because I know what will occur, and this is clouding my view of what I see as passion. And honestly, at this point, I still don't see the Mark Shaw that I enjoy reading about. He's there, he's a glimmer, he's a seed, but he's not the Mark Shaw from 1988. Yet. One additional thing I need to call out is Uncle Bradford Shaw. In the future, he'll have a different name, and as much of the book, I wondered if he was just going to be called Uncle over and over again. In the end, I wonder if this is going to be another game of musical chairs and musical names in comic books like we'll see with other stories. But at the moment, I did have to chuckle that the original name of the uncle was Bradford and Shaw. One last thing I have to call out and that I love about the comic book Time Machine is the ads. In 1975 was a dangerous place to be walking around. Because when you look at these ads, it's all about the action. There's a full-page advertisement that offers to share the skills of the men who could fight or disappear. Learn the secret powers of the deadliest killers of the Orient, the physio-mental power of the ninja. And the ad goes on to declare, now you can learn their skills, which were unsurpassed even by the deadly samurai. But let's just say you're unsatisfied with the physio-mental power of the ninja. Why don't you learn the skills of Count Dante, then, who has his own full-page ad, the deadliest man alive. If you doubt Count Dante, he is the undefeated supreme grandmaster of the fighting arts. He has beat the masters of judo, boxing, wrestling, kung fu, karate, aikido, and etc. Whatever etc. is. Now, young man, you can learn his secrets. Seriously. 1975, if you're going to jump back to 1975, you need to be fully prepared because there are 10-year-olds walking around with Chuck Norris skills, and you are about to enter an action romp. Beware, time travelers. 1975, not a safe place. Well, I hope that you've enjoyed my first dive into the Manhunter Mark Shaw history. I know that I have. This has been a fun one for me just because I got to see something I hadn't expected, got to experience something that I didn't see as a kid. And I really do hope you join me next time that I jump into a Manhunter with Ostrander and Yale's Manhunter number one. A great, great nemesis is going to be arriving soon from Mark Shaw. So, again, I hope you've had fun. You can follow me online at BetweenDisney.com, where I talk about all sorts of things Disney, including my love of some Disney-related comic books. You can connect with me on Twitter at BetweenDisney and on Facebook at Facebook.com/BetweenDisney. And then also you can always find me and Ben at WelcomeToLevel7.com with the 7 spelled out. And you can always find Ben, Matt, and myself at ComicBookTimeMachine.com.